Hello, and welcome to episode 7 of season 2 of My Dog Will Eat My Face. I apologize in advance if I sound a little stuffed up today, because, well, I am a little stuffed up today. There's just no way around it, so you get to listen to my, horse, I don't know, truck stop voice for today's podcast. Please give me your forgiveness, but I'm just doing the best I can. Anyway, today I'm going to touch on a very, very taboo topic in modern society. And I've never done this before, but I sincerely encourage listener discretion to be advised in the case of this podcast. Because one of the things that we're going to cover, the main theme we're going to cover, is actually suicide. Yeah, I'll let that sink in. So, again, listener discretion is strongly advised. If you feel that you can't handle a topic like that, or you want to listen to it maybe later in the comfort of your home and not in front of coworkers or something, you know, please take an effort to do that. The goal here is not to make anyone else out there upset, but it is to talk about a very important topic that is seldom discussed in modern society, unfortunately, I think. I think that lack of discussion just makes it worse, to be honest. Everyone kind of is afraid to even mention it, let alone talk about it. People avert their eyes. People end the conversation. People suddenly have to leave and be somewhere. So I hope enough of you, my good listeners, are mature enough to handle a topic like this. It's going to touch on some pretty heavy topics, but for me right now, it's very important for me to talk about this thing, and again, that is suicide in today's world. So, with that said, if you feel that you can proceed with me, we'll go through this together. I'll hold your hand. We'll trudge through it. And we'll come out the other side, probably in the need of a shower. But we'll make it together, I promise. It's not the goal of this podcast, or any other I produce, to hurt anyone's feelings, but sometimes it is to talk about important topics out there, and sometimes those topics are very taboo, at least in Western American society. For listeners abroad, this might be as simple as talking about cake frosting. No big deal there. So for those folks, though, more stateside, and some of the folks in Europe, I do strongly encourage some discretion to listen to this podcast. With that happy warning being laid out, let's go ahead and get started with this horrible topic. might wonder, why now? Why is it at this moment am I bringing up this topic? Well, I had the unfortunate opportunity to attend a friend's funeral just within the last week. I attended it virtually because I'm so unable to walk very far and I'm hooked up to oxygen. But thankfully they live streamed it, so I managed to attend virtually. But anyway, it was the funeral of a friend of mine. I wouldn't say he's a good friend, but there were certainly moments where we had hung out together, did things together. And this friend was actually the main squeeze, chief significant other boyfriend of another old friend of mine who I've been friends with for decades, probably since my early 20s. So they were both married, actually, these two friends of mine, but the friend in question, for the purpose of this podcast, I'm going to call him Larry. That's not his real name. For the purpose of this podcast, Larry was on vacation, apparently, with his boyfriend in the city of New Orleans. Again, very recently. And while he was there, Larry took his own life. I heard this, of course, from his boyfriend for 8 years that they've been together, that they were on vacation in New Orleans together, and that's where Larry decided to punch his own ticket out. Now, upon hearing this, I, like you, probably had a million questions. Why did he do it on vacation? How did he do it? Couldn't have been a gun because he was out of town. I don't think he's got carried conceal. Maybe he does, I don't know. So, my mind upon the news was flowing with questions about it, but I knew I could not ask my friend, my other friend, for such morbid, horrible details. But from what I heard was enough to really strike home the fact that he did it, the fact that he did it while he was on vacation with his significant other. Truly sounds absolutely horrific for those surviving poor Larry. So, as I stated, I attended the remembrance service that they had for Larry via a virtual connection, because I myself cannot physically appear. And I listened to my friend of many years, a very close friend of mine, who was his significant other, give a eulogy and a short prayer. And it was about that time when I absolutely started to cry. and weep for what was going on. When my good friend of so many years finished, after breaking up so much and just sounding utterly crushed during his prayer and eulogy, I texted him and I just said, "Hey, that prayer that you said was absolutely beautiful. And I have to tell you, and this is coming from me as someone who's not religious, but I think your prayer has been answered because I already feel touched." Why did I say that? It was because one of the closing statements by my good friend was for God to touch everyone in attendance and everyone who knew Larry to overcome their grief and to get through this difficult day. So that's what I was referring to when I said I felt touched already. In this case, by God. Now, I'm a total atheist, don't get me wrong. But most definitely, when he finished that prayer, is when I busted out crying. So it was no lie that I was feeling very different. And I know, coming from me, a totally non-religious person, this statement would carry with it a lot more weight for my friend and his grief. He replied simply with, "Thank you." And our conversation for now ended there. And one thing I have to add, though, is that Larry's suicide is unfortunately not my first rodeo. All in all in my life that I know of, I've had 3 friends, including Larry, commit suicide during the course of our friendship. I've also known plenty of other people that were the husbands of their wives. I might know the wife and the husband killed himself, so I've known plenty of that. I'm not even going to bother to count that. But of personal friends that I was close to, Larry, unfortunately, was the 3rd one that, as I said before, punched his own ticket. So, unfortunately, I had some experience with this. And I think it's prudent to share that experience, at least, with you here today as I talk about this topic. As I said, Larry was not my first rodeo, unfortunately. I had another friend, I would say a long time ago by now, maybe just over 10 years ago, also take his own life. I know less of the details with respect to that. I know that he suffered from depression. I know that he was romantically smitten with someone. And what little understanding I have with respect to what occurred is that the love he expressed for this other person was not returned. And because of that, he decided to kill himself. And he was, I would say, a very good friend. In fact, there was at least one time in my memory, way back in the past, where I talked him out of suicide while on the phone when he was really depressed. And it ended well. He didn't do it, and he felt better having someone to talk to. I don't know why he didn't bother to try to talk to anyone when this happened. He just did it. I don't know what was going through his head. But again, it seemed to be just over love that was not returned. So that was several years ago, and that one I know the least amount. His family was unfortunately very protective, and so I was not even invited to a funeral, unfortunately. And of course, I have no clue how he did it. There could have been a million ways he could have done it. So that curiosity got to me, but I had to leave it unanswered. And the fact of the matter is, for all those people who have had similar experiences and are curious as to how someone did it, I truly think that in most cases, it's better we don't know how they did it. And that's because that sort of knowledge, at least in my experience, just results in more depression and more confusion as to how this person could have done that. So, let me try and explain that further here in the next segment. So, as I talk about this third event, I think you'll see why I say it's sometimes best to not know all the details as to why and how, especially how, someone might have chosen to end their own life. In this example, the third and probably the most prominent and also my first experience with dealing with suicide and others, really underscores that it's sometimes best to just not know. So in this instance, it was unfortunately not just a friend that offed himself, it was my high school best friend. So I would say for the last 3 years of high school, you know, only exception being maybe the first year as freshman, but sophomore, junior, and senior years, this individual, his name was Mike, let's say. Mike was a good friend of mine through all those years. Very good friend. We'd often hang out together, play video games together. We did a lot of things. It was a very, very good friendship. Now, I saw him the day before, even, when he killed himself. And he seemed perfectly happy and normal and jovial. And I'll explain later why that actually is a warning sign. For someone who's normally regularly kind of depressed, if they're suddenly really happy, that's a warning sign. I'll talk about that here in a little bit, but let me first tell you what happened. So I met him the day before over a microphone thing that we were dealing with. It doesn't matter. And he went home that day and apparently got high-powered rifle footage. Forehead and pulled the trigger right before his father came home from work. So it was absolutely an instantaneous death. Definitely no suffering. And I know this because I had the, I don't know what you wish to call it, I'm just going to say the experience because there's no other way to put it. I had the experience of talking with his dad after the fact. His dad called me and said, in great detail, what he had found. So, Mike's head was off. So, a piece of jaw just kind of dangled there with some skin attached to it. Also that the body itself was still warm, meaning that he must have done it right before his father came home. Broken up. So the year long talk, having a pensive moment. There's nothing wrong with your connection. I'm just, I'm thinking. It's a hard topic to think about. Yeah, he was my best friend, and obviously went to the funeral. No casket. That's for sure. So that was my first rodeo, and it was extremely rough. So, going back to my original comment, this isn't my first rodeo with this. It's truly not, unfortunately. I've now had three friends choose to kill themselves. And especially in the case of the first, I had the quote-unquote good fortune of talking to his weeping father. Thanking me for giving him joy in his son's life. He was, by the way, his dad's and mother's only child. Needless to say, they were devastated. I would talk to them. Even when the father would tell me what he found. That gruesome day. In fact, how I was notified of his death was rather interesting. I was home alone. Remember, this is me just out of high school, so. This is many years back. I think this is going slightly into the Jurassic period. So, I was home alone drafting on my drafting table. Because I'm a geek, I like to draft and design buildings for fun. And so, of course, I have my own personal drafting table. I still do. I love it. To where I get to design my own buildings and infrastructure, and I do that just for fun. So at the time, it was set up in an upstairs bedroom in the house that I lived, and I was really absorbed into what I was doing, and I suddenly hear that knock at the door. I go ahead downstairs, and I see a man fairly, very nicely dressed in a nice suit, gray suit. And I was thinking to myself, oh golly, what is this salesman here to sell me? So I begrudgingly opened the door. And he asked me if my name was what it is. And I just kind of paused. Then he said, may I come in? And me being the insufferable little constitutionalist that I am, I said, no, you can't come in. He says, don't worry, you're not in trouble. I just said, I know I'm not in trouble. That's why I'm not letting you in. Because at the time, there's absolutely nothing I could have done that could have been trouble. At least that was my thought process. You know, I was a little naive, okay? But I thought, there's no way I could did anything that was troublemaking. So I'm not even worried about that. But when he asked me if I was my friend's friend, it just hit me like a brick
wall.
It just hit me so hard that something bad happened. And he identified himself to you as a police detective. I should have added that earlier. So I'm sure he's seen my reaction 1,000 times. And that's when he said, I think you should let me in and you should sit down. And when I heard that, I said, okay. And that's when he told me that my best friend took his own life the night prior. And asked me the routine questions they would ask of anyone. Any sign of depression? Did he say anything? That sort of thing. I told him as much as I knew, which was probably not very helpful. And he left, and I was there, home alone. My parents weren't there. They weren't going to be there for several hours, so I was just home alone with that knowledge, stewing on that. Until they did come home, my parents came home, and I kind of unloaded onto them. So that was my first rodeo, and it was pretty darn harsh. The subsequent two, I truly admit that they weren't as bad. Not nearly as graphic. And not nearly as personal. These were not best friends, but still friends. And I had the good honor of dealing with my friend's surviving family, his mom and his dad. And that was extremely difficult for me, a teenager, to deal with a husband and wife who lost their only child. So, my dear listener, even though I am saddened by my recent friend's death, it's not only my first rodeo, but it's also not nearly as traumatic, I think. Although it is pretty soon, it's rather raw. So, maybe a better way to put it is only time will tell how it will affect me. So, I guess we'll just have to wait and find out. So, one very important thing I've learned through these experiences is that the worst damage seems to be done to the survivor of any suicide. I think that's true without a doubt. Trying to get through something like that, the deceased has it easy. Those who survive them have a very rough road ahead of them. And I want to touch a little bit on another topic that's going to honestly result in some self-damnation, to be blunt. There have been many times in my life, in my emotional growth, where I thought, more or less, the world was ending for whatever reason. Could be just a breakup. Oh yeah, absolutely. I've completely gotten off the wall for breakups, emotionally. To include threatening to kill myself to friends and family. Now, was I really going to do it? I don't think so. If you really wanted to do it, why would you tell anyone? I mean, I've got the master plan from my best friend in high school on how to do it. You don't say a word, you look perfectly normal. Oh, that reminds me, I was going to say how when he was super nice, that was actually a bad sign. Because with people that are super depressed, this is something that I've read. I'm sure many of you say, no, that's not true, but I'm not an expert. But from what I've read, if someone is really depressed and suicidal and they decide that they're going to take action and actually kill themselves, they have a plan, they actually become much more happy. It's like a huge weight is lifted. And then they go from acting all depressed and mopey to thrilled, ecstatic, happy, friendly, knowing full well that they're going to end it. They're happy because they have a plan now to end their life. So if you have a friend who's super depressed all the time, has threatened suicide, and then one day is super duper happy, don't think, oh good, he's doing much better. No, that is a red flag that he or she might have a plan to off themselves, and you need to confront that. Because that's exactly how it went down with my best friend. Exactly. So that's my tip to everyone in the universe. If you encounter that, don't take it as a good sign. It's a scary sign that they might very well have a plan that they're going to execute upon or have already started to execute upon to kill themselves. Could be totally wrong, but don't take chances. That's my advice. Anyway, sorry, I had to blurb that out. And of course, my voice is going a little bit. Golly, dealing with the heart failure sucks. Anyway, it's true that I had made threats to kill myself in the past. Now, if I was really going to do it, as I said, I wouldn't tell anyone. By telling someone, I know in my heart of hearts, it was a cry for help. And of course, it all failed. I never did it. Because I didn't want to commit suicide. I wanted a cry for help. And that's all fine and dandy, but my position on that changed dramatically only very recently. I was reading one of my most favorite authors, who is now deceased, unfortunately, Christopher Hitchens, who said that threatening to kill yourself is the most cowardly and destructive and horrible thing you can do to those people who love you. If you have to cry for help, fine, just cry for help. But don't cook up something like that. That is going to spiral them down a huge chasm of their own depression. It is cowardly, and it is a terrible thing to do to others, to lie and to say you're going to kill yourself. And he said that multiple times under no uncertain terms, that if you threaten to kill yourself and you don't do it, you're basically a piece of shit. It is the rudest and it is the worst thing you could do to anyone, especially to anyone who loves you. And I was thrown back. Here's my favorite author basically telling me that when I did it, I was a complete ass. But he was right. Doing that is a terrible thing to do, to threaten to do that. Is absolutely a horrific and cowardly thing to do to your loved ones or friends or anyone else. If you have to make a cry for help, fine, cry for help. It doesn't mean don't take suicide threats not seriously. You have to take them seriously because you don't know. More than likely, it's just a cry for help, frankly. But you don't have that guarantee. Maybe even 90% of the time when someone says it, it's just a cry for help. You don't want to hit that 10% and have a suicide on your watch when you could have called someone and stopped it. So all suicide threats must be taken seriously. And that's why, really, when you threaten it and you don't intend it, you are a cowardly, pathetic, and destructive person. And this was my favorite author, basically bitch slapping me from across the pages. And this was several years ago, honestly, when I read this. And incidentally, I had another good friend of mine tell me kind of the same thing, that he shared that opinion on, we were talking about something else, but he shared that same opinion more or less that I read. So I said to myself, well, I'm never going to do that again. If I'm going to kill myself, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to threaten it. And my problem is I would threaten it as a joke. And sometimes I might do that, you know. I might say, oh, no choice but to kill myself again, you know. Ha-ha, it's a joke. Kill myself again, you know. But even that, I've tried to dramatically cut, even using wisecracks that refer to that, because it is so destructive. And it can be so destructive to people, especially survivors of suicide. Friends and family who have lost ones, loved ones to suicide. So that's my advice to everyone listening. Don't ever threaten it. If you want to cry for help, you say, I need help. You don't cook up a lie to cause tremendous stress and horrible feelings in another human being. It's wrong. It's cruel. And it just hurts the people that do care about you. So please don't ever do that. That's the lesson of today's podcast, I think. Don't threaten to do it unless you really intend to do it. So anyway, upon learning that fact, which unfortunately came to me later in my life, I've made a steadfast effort to not make such threats. And for me, that was kind of difficult for one very particular reason, which I'll get into here in the next segment. As many of you know, I'm in home hospice, struggling with progressive heart failure and now kidney failure. So, in my state, I actually applied for and qualified for what they call medical assistance in death. And what that is you present a case to I don't know who two of those two actually. I guess it goes to the state and it goes to the supervising doctors. You may come to a point where your quality of life is going to be unbearable. And should that happen, you are qualified for medical assistance in death. Now, I've applied for it, and I've been approved for it. And I even have the cocktail in my house that if I take it, I fall asleep in 6 minutes. And then just die in my sleep. So literally in my nightstand, I've got a cocktail of death medicine, where if I take it, it would kill me. And it's, again, it's called medical assistance in death, or MAID, M-A-I-D. So, this topic touches on that because they get so close together. Now, if you take MAID, legally, it is not considered suicide. So, your life insurance and your estate, all those things, are not nullified. You know, if I jump in front of a moving train, that's a suicide. My life insurance goes away, which I don't want. But if I take the MAID medication, it's considered death of heart failure. The death is of the fundamental thing of why I qualified for the MAID. And that is okay then with insurance companies and other organizations out there that qualify death based on suicide or natural causes. And it's a big issue in my family. You know, they don't like to talk about me saying I have my MAID medication. And when I would get stressed out, I would say I got to hit the MAID medication, which is just as bad as threatening suicide. So in my case, I have to be extra careful and make sure I don't even go there when it comes to MAID. So even though I qualify, even though I have the cocktail in my possession, I don't go on about it. I've learned that going on about it is really useless. There are times where it enters my mind for some reason or another, not necessarily to use it, but something else, I don't know, and it might come up in passing, but I don't use it as a weapon. That's the difference. I don't use it as a weapon to use against friends and family, because that's the exact same thing as threatening suicide to these people, even though legally, no, it's not suicide. I've tried that argument. People don't care. They say, suicide, schmuicide. You know, it, call it for what it is. It's still suicide to them. So even though legally I'm right and I can say, hey, it's not suicide, it doesn't help. So in my particular case, it's something I've got to be careful with, even though it is a benefit, quote unquote, that I'm qualified for under the state and even have the cocktail in my possession. So that means that I have to be extra careful, even with respect to that which is fully legal and approved in the state that I live. So I have to be, yeah, as I said, more careful. And I try to be. You know, there's times where it comes up in passing. But that's just it. It comes up in passing. But lately, I've tried to cut it out as a threat. No matter what, it's a threat. And a threat of using something like that or killing yourself is the really lousy part that makes you a terrible person, frankly, if you do that. And I've got a long road to rebuild of me never doing that again. Never making a threat like that again. And that's just something I've learned the hard way in hospice. People are already broken up that I'm in hospice care. There's no reason to add to the fire. That's just insane. So I've got to be extra careful in my dialogue. Even though I might be talking about benefits and money and something like that, and MAID medication comes up, you know, it is what it is. As a positive note, I say to everyone, look, I have the MAID cocktail in my night dresser. To this point, I've had no reason at all to use it. Of all the bad things that have happened to me while I've been in hospice, and there's been a lot, up to and including a friend's suicide, I see no reason to use MAID right now. It's not even on my radar. And of all the bad things that have happened to me and all the bad circumstances, none of them have led to me taking MAID. And I'll tell people the only thing I can think of scenario in which I would take maid right now is if I look out my window and there's mushroom clouds on the horizon. In a case like that, I'd probably take the easy way out rather than dying of radiation poisoning, you know. So that's about the only circumstance I could think of. But it's my goal to live as long as possible for my sake, for my dog's sake. I love my dog. I don't want to leave him. He deserves, you know, a family. And he's got one now. And so even though that maid is legally not suicide, I have to treat it in close company as though it is. And that's just an example of how you have to be careful with what you say. You don't want to have the outside parties to your life be instilled with fear that you might elect to punch your own ticket out. That's just cruel. It's absolutely cruel. So, I just had to add that tidbit as how this closely relates to me in my life because of this qualification that I have. And I sometimes have to talk about it because it's expensive medication and all that stuff, you know. And it comes in a conversation, but I don't use it as a threat. If anything, it's warming, hopefully, to others who know me. Because despite everything I've been through, I haven't touched it. I haven't used it yet. I still want to live. So, that's a big lesson, not only in what to say and what not to say to others, but it's also a big lesson in my mental well-being at the moment. Because again, I have no plans to use it. Some would think that's a good thing. So, that's all I'm saying. To close out this week's podcast, because as you can probably tell, my voice is losing it on me. Heart failure sucks. Anyway, so yeah, I'm kind of gonna have to force a closure today to today's podcast, but I did and want to end it with some kind of main points here. You know, when you're faced with suicide, it's not dissimilar when you're faced with someone you know who's in dire medical need. I could be an example. And I know that in those cases, it is much worse for the observer. It is much worse for the outsider. They're the ones that truly I think that's because there's a sense of loss of control when it's someone else. When it's someone else, you're overwhelmed with the feeling of hopelessness if they're facing something dire. Now, if you are an individual facing something dire, you may at the very least have a false sense of control. It might be completely hubris, but when it's happening to you, you can't help but feel there's still some control you could way over the situation. It might be totally untrue. Often is untrue. But you get that feeling. And that's more liberating than the feeling of total hopelessness. So when you're dealing with suicide, or any death, it's much harder for the family and the loved ones and the observer than it is for the victim. Especially with death. They're dead. They don't care. But everyone alive cares. But that's why threatening suicide or something like that, it's just the lousiest thing you could do to someone. It's taking advantage of that horrible truth that I just shared and trying to use it as a cry for help, when there are so many other ways you can cry for help without utterly devastating and scaring your loved ones. I even have to be careful when I talk about my medication with family members. I have to tiptoe around it because I might have legitimate issues with it, cost, pick up location, steps in the process, whatever it is. But still, the family members usually don't want to hear it. So for anything like that, even if it's legal, you just gotta be careful. Your loved ones are trying to protect you from anything bad happening to you. And if they perceive something bad happening to you that's caused by you, they get overwhelmed with a feeling of hopelessness, and no one deserves that. So with that said, I'm going to, again, as I already said, close out this week's podcast before my voice totally goes. And I sound like I was at a hockey game all last night. But if you want to follow the podcast, be sure to click follow and turn on notifications so you're aware of future podcasts. And if you really want to help the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/mydogwilleatmyface. But in all honesty, you've already done the best thing you can do for me in supporting the podcast. And that simply is you've listened to me and giving me your ear to my rambling. In all seriousness, I thank you for that. I thank you for giving me a voice so someone in the world could hear the things I'm going through. Just knowing there are others there to listen helps to make me feel better about my situation, no matter what it is. So anyway, that's all I will have for this week. Hopefully I'll talk to you again soon. And for now, auf Wiedersehen.